And we are back, Black and a Half, episode number 105. I'm Silas Lindenstein, here again with my guest co-host,
Samantha Rudd.
Samantha is back. A special, not a reboot, but a new format for episode 105. Actually, I got a little outline of where to go on the show. Some segment ideas of what I thought everybody's enjoyed from different parts, and try to make it consistent as much as we can. So I did. And on episode 105, we have a good friend of mine from Unexpected Productions, Jason DeLeo. Jason DeLeo is here. Hello, Jason. Hey.
Hey, Jason.
This is part of the quarantine series. As you know, if you're listening to this in 5 years from now, we had this thing called the coronavirus, and, it kept us at home for ever. And, as you know, in 5 years, how you're still doing all Zoom podcasts. This was a great episode. We started off, we did some hot topics. We talked about Shelley Lewis, the viral video woman who's refusing to wear a mask. We talked about Twitter, how they're fact-checking Donald Trump. And we talked about Joe Biden saying people ain't black. We talked about all that. And I gave you some recommendations for some viewings on both for a series and film. So listen to that. And then we finished up with a little, found out a little background on Jason, found out his history and how he got to be the lovely man that he is today. Short little interview on there. And, of course, we asked him the 7 questions. And it was a fun episode. I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you enjoy it so much that you go and onto iTunes and rate this 5-star podcast and leave a nice little review. And if it's a really cool review, I'll read it on the air. Samantha, we should start doing that. We should just read.
That'd be awesome.
We should read. We should read positive reviews, maybe even negative ones, but mainly positive.
Yeah. What about quotables too?
Funny.
Huh?
The negative ones are the funny ones.
That's true.
If somebody has a favorite line, we could
of the show
do that too. Yeah. Oh, those are always fun, I think.
Yeah. Say that on a review.
As long as if I said something embarrassing, just gloss right over it and forget you heard it.
Yeah.
Write it down in your diary. Tell no one.
And of course, best way to, if you like the podcast, please share it with other people. So that they can listen to this and become fans, and those fans eventually they go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/blackandahalf, and they become patrons of the show and help support it. Or there's other ways they could support this show. They could go to silasgetsreal.com and message Silas and buy a house. If you buying a house supports this show, why not? Or you could go to Patreon and spend like $5 a month. One or the other.
Hey, Silas, yeah. What if I want to sell a house?
If you want to sell a house, you can go to silasgetsreal.com and message me as well. And it helps fund the show. Buy or sell. I do them both. And of course, if you are in, if you are looking to buy a home, please check out the sister podcast of this, how to, you're buying a home with Silas Lindenstein at youreBuyingAHome.com. All right. That's the advertisement. This is now a tax deduction. Okay, so hey, listen, Samantha.
Holla.
Jason, what? Thank you. Thanks for doing
thank
this.
Thank you.
Always appreciate the time. So here we go.
I didn't get to talk about Place to Bone.
Place to Bone? Oh, I forgot about that.
That's okay. You have to bring it back.
Okay, I'll bring it back to talk about places you bone, I guess. That's what I heard.
Boy,
it's my new marketing strategy for marketing locals to stay in my Airbnbs. I have a Twitter page at Bone Place, and my Facebook page is Place to Bone, and it's basically a way of renting out my last minute empties to locals who want to spend an evening away from whatever they need to be away from.
I am amazed at how quickly this changed my whole idea of who you were.
I'm basically trying to come up with a better option for people who go to cheap motels to screw around.
That's wonderful. That's working. That's brave.
Yeah,
of
I was
you.
Like, that's definitely it's catchy. Working? I don't think anybody's going to forget that.
Is it working?
Well, I haven't done the place to bone or the bone place side of it. That's something I'm working on now. But the marketing to all my locals who book, find me on Airbnb and trying to get them to come back is totally working. And what I've been working on is a way to communicate with them without spamming them that, hey, I have an empty tonight. It's $60. If you want to stay in this room, first person to tweet me gets it. And I'm kind of working that plan right now. It's being put together, but right now I just text like 30 people and somebody responds. Almost every time.
And if you are local and you are looking, you know, can I say what city your Airbnbs are in? Is that all right?
Yeah, I'm in Burien. Are we still on?
Yeah, this is the intro. I'm in.
Okay. For a moment, I was wondering too.
If you are listening and you want, he has some great Airbnbs. They are private. I want to say like most of them are private. So that this isn't like a hotel. This is a. It is. They are great little homes that you
think
can
of
go
them
in.
As studios.
Yeah, that Office you can studio. Go bone in, and you should support this show. Buy a house and go bone in Jason's house. That's what I'm going to say.
And if you would like something unhouse related, I am a performance coach. I cannot plug myself right now because I'm making too many jokes and it's unprofessional.
That's right. But if you do want some acting coaching, check out the link on the blackandahalf.com page for this show, and you can check out sign up with Samantha to some acting coaching. That'd be go beyond. You got some technique, but you need to go beyond it. So, right. Okay. I'm not writing her ad copy. Okay.
I was like, I'm done talking right now. I'm just going to.
Here we are. Episode number 105.
Tapping out.
Jason DeLeo. Tapping out.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
So I was a panelist. I was invited to be on a panel today because I was a parent and I am a Comcast subscriber. Okay. Like, and I don't mind saying this because this is like the most Comcast thing that could have happened to me today. So I was going to be on this panel. It's about 1:30. So they wanted me to have, they sent an email and it is a paid panel. I'm going to get money in like 60 days for it a little bit. But to listen to about, it was going to be about the internet and screen time and managing screen time with children now and how we're dealing with that. And they were, you know, they're going to give that, but then they sent an email and saying, oh, and be sure to use your Grubhub gift card so that you can order lunch during this. And I was like, oh, did I miss an email? I typed them back. Did I miss an email about the gift card?
Yeah. Where's my gift card?
Yeah. And they said, oh, it was in that, it's in the packet, the folder that was dropped at your house with the little gift bag they gave dropped off Saturday. And so I pulled it and I'm going to show it here. I'm going to describe it on camera. So I did find it. It was this, So it's a,
you're going to have to turn off the effect.
Can you, oh, you can't hold on
or put it right over your face. Cause we can see your face.
That's true.
Okay. Oh yeah.
So, what it is, what I'm showing them is it's a printed out email right? Yeah. That the for a gift card when you get emails, and it says on the bottom, it says get your gift card, and then it's going to redirect you to this site where they're going to redeem it. So I was trying to press this piece of paper to get to my gift card, because there's no number here. There's no number on this. They printed out an email that I'm supposed to click a link to get the gift card.
That's funny.
And I will remind you, this is about discussing technology. Okay. So, and this was from the PR department at Comcast. And I think this is the most Comcast thing that they could have done to me is here's a picture of a gift card. Like, so you can think about lunch.
Xfinity would never do that, but Comcast. Absolutely. They're like yesterday.
What's the difference between Comcast and Xfinity?
Rebranding. It's a rebranding.
I thought they were Xfinity, and then they said they were Comcast. I'm like, I don't know what's going on anymore.
You know, Comcast. Comcast is the parent company. Comcast, okay. And Xfinity is like the cable part.
What's the most ridiculous?
Basically a rebrand because Comcast has such a negative name.
So I emailed them back and I said, you know, I don't know if I'm missing something here, because I know I'm not, but I don't know if I'm missing something, but I think I just got a printout of the gift card. So I got a picture of it. So I sent a picture of that, and she said, oh, I'll talk to Andrew. 3 hours later, the conference started and I had nothing. No, I just ate a banana. Like, I didn't. And so I still haven't heard a response to that.
That's so funny.
And now
I
was telling my wife, I don't know whether to be mad or not, because it's not like I didn't even know until like this morning that they were going to provide lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, well, I want my lunch now. Like, you told me I was going to get one. So now there's a principle of this, right? Like,
was that through Comcast? Did they contact you, or was it through one of these third party companies that does these sort of things?
Well, the person who helped with this panel was working with Comcast in conjunction to put this panel together. But it's from Comcast PR, who dropped me off, and I got a water bottle and a cell phone holder and an Xfinity power bank. You know,
that's cool. No, the reason I ask is because I do those all the time. I'm on like 5 or 6 different companies lists for these panels, and super fun. I love them.
Oh yeah.
I just did one the other day, a couple days ago. It was a political one. It was really cool. A couple $100 for an hour of time.
So, jeez, that sounds good.
Oh yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, I've done those. And,
I mean, look at us giving our opinions away for free like a bunch of chumps. Like, jeez. They
use Google chat rooms, which nobody for the company knew how to use. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. Samantha, you haven't done like Microsoft user testing? You didn't do it before?
Have done that before.
No.
Oh yeah. Uh-uh. I don't know if they still do it, but you used to like go in and you could pick a piece of software like out of their thing. So like I would go get another copies of Windows because, you know, it was pricey, or I'd pick the most expensive thing always. I was like, no, and just that. I even got one once where I went and then they had too many people showed up. And so then they were like, well, we'll still give we can't use you because they already got enough people for this, but we'll still give you the thing. So what do you want? And I was like, I'll take Windows 98, whatever. You know? And they're like looking at me like it's the most expensive thing they have, and I'm like, damn right. I'm not gonna pick the $20 piece of software. Are you kidding me?
And then you have to sign that you won't sell it. And then as soon as you walk out the door,
now they could trace that. Actually, I just had a lot of computers back then, so it was like, oh great, I can upgrade. There we go.
Nice.
But it's so funny. It was such a me thing to happen. So anyway.
I have an annoying computer story for you if you'd like it.
Yeah.
Off topic. Oh. I got a HP Chromebook a year ago just so that I could take it while traveling or on set or something. So I wouldn't need to take like the good one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Freaking thing just stopped working a few days after the warranty was up.
Oh,
won't turn on.
I thought only Apple did that.
Oh man, I was so upset. I was like, it won't turn on, and it doesn't have, you know, like the battery can't really get to it. And yeah, then fixing it, it's like, well, that's going to be about half of the price that it costs or more. So I'm just like, I guess I need a, hey Silas, maybe we can do this. I need to like write a short film or something where I can use this thing as a prop, because other, yeah, like, man, I refuse to get rid of it. And I'm, yeah, like, I paid good money for that. Well,
a Chromebook?
I paid money for that.
I'm like, it's like $100, right? Like,
it was like $200, but still, yeah, I did not get my $200 worth, you know? You know?
Yeah.
I took it to some open mics. I used it for notes a few times. I took it to a few sets. I took it on a few airplane rides.
It saw the world.
But it just, it did, it, you know, lived, it had a good life, but it lived fast and hard and intermittently, and it just wanted more.
But Samantha, that's a lesson we should all take with us, right? Live fast and hard, because you don't know when the end is going to happen.
Oh,
right?
This is, oh man, we can't make jokes like that right now.
Ooh, you should put that on. Huh?
Oh man.
Okay. So we're going to get hot topics. I'm gonna have to get music effects now, right?
Yeah.
I need to start getting music that I can punch in.
You, like, should have a live
hot
musician.
Hot topics. I know that'll be.
A live musician? Yeah, let me go get my harmonica. Actually, no, I don't know where
I'm
it is.
A live musician.
Jason's a musician. So,
do it.
Yeah,
yes, I am.
Do it. Can we do that again? Well, just like, are you ready? Well, are you, yeah, ready?
Oh, he just, oh, makes, no, makes instruments appear.
Okay. I'll wait. I will wait. It is worth waiting.
Shows for unexpected productions over at the market, and I've been doing all their Zoom, most of their Zoom shows that we've been doing. So it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Very cool.
We'll come up with a ditty. We'll come up for a ditty for this. But okay, first one.
Hot topic.
Shelly. a viral video of a woman, Shelly Lewis, refusing to wear a mask to Gelson's supermarket. Never heard of the supermarket before. But it was, you both watched the video?
Yeah, I've been to a Gelson's before.
Oh, have you? Really?
They had them in California.
Yep, Southern California chain.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't remember going to it. You saw the video? Both of you watched it, right?
I did.
Woman going nuts, talking about, she was very upset because she didn't want to wear a mask into the store, and didn't want to give them her credit card she didn't want them to shop because they said she was looking for personal items, or to give the credit card like you do at a restaurant, you know, how they walk away with the credit card.
That's just
card.
What I was thinking.
Here's the, I don't know if you saw this part of it, but this woman who refused to wear the mask, also a flat earther.
Really?
Big surprise.
Yes.
You know,
she's known as a flat earther down in Southern California. It's all this stuff because she said her name. People looked it up and said, oh, that's her, the flat earther.
Yeah, that's, we're starting to see some correlations between the anti-mask lobby and other groups. And I don't want to make this political because I don't think you want that. But CNN did a whole report today, and they're starting to see a definite divide. And when Biden decided to start throwing out his comments today during the CNN interview, the throwdown occurred. It's now a division. So I love that now the flat earthers are part of it too.
Well, I was so sad because, like, with COVID's kind of taken over and the conspiracy theories, and you're like, now flat earth was having its heyday, and she's like reviving it, and like, she should be a hero, right? Because the earth is flat and she doesn't need a mask. That's the two things she knows in life.
I'm surprised by the number of reasonable people who are not wearing masks, but I think a lot of them live in other cities where it's not necessarily, I wouldn't say it's like mandatory everywhere here, but I'm just still surprised to, like, people that I know that aren't wearing masks. Like,
a lot of it is that the level of whether you're interested is kind of depends on where you live and what you've experienced. Like, we live in a major city. We were the center of it for a while. So we're exposed. We all know somebody who had it or know somebody who was in a, you know, in a nursing home. Or whereas a lot of these people, especially in the smaller towns, Midwest, that area, they don't know anybody. All they see is what they see on the news and they see what's on Fox. So that, I think, is a lot of it. But you're right. We are seeing it in big cities, you know, in Southern California. I mean, that's.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see, like, I go out and see people without masks all the time here, too.
Well, and so. I always wonder, like, when I do see them, I'm trying not to pass judgment, you know, on them. Like, I mean, as much as I can do that ever. But, like, I don't know. Like, when I see them, I run through the questions. I was like, do they not believe? Do they forget it at home? Do they have a health condition? Like, I'm like, why aren't you wearing it? Why aren't you pretend? But I am less bothered by them than the people that are wearing a mask that's covering their neck like a scarf. Right. Because, because then I'm like, oh, you're just doing
it. They might have a second mouth.
Well,
you know, second breakfast. Or, you never know.
Or just like that. They like, oh, I have to wear a mask, but they can't tell me how. Like, you know, I feel like it's being extra saucy by doing it that way. But I run through there. I just run through my head every time I see it. And like, Jason, you posted a picture today. I think it was today you posted a picture of your.
Oh, your headshot. Your
Unexpected Productions crew or something.
Oh, no.
Right. Was that today or yesterday?
The one with the hats?
I think so. Every time I see anyone posting a picture now. If they don't have masks on, I'm like, oh, and it's like, oh, they're not social distancing. And then I'm like, oh, that's an old photo. Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. Like every time I see anyone post an old photo, I have a reaction if they're like close together or not wearing a mask. I'm like, no, that's okay. That's okay.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Walmart to pick up a life jacket because I was going to do some social distancing wave runner riding. And walked in, giant signs everywhere. Put on a mask, do your hand sanitizer. There was an employee at the entrance that's job it was to make sure everybody did these things. They were busy chatting it up with a person of the opposite sex and just ignoring what was going on. So I went in, did my hand sanitizer, had my mask, walked in about to probably about four or five aisles, turned around and walked out. Kind of freaked out a little, this was a couple of weeks ago. I probably wouldn't do that today, but it was weird. I was like, I don't want to be in here, and turned around and walked out because nobody had masks. Everybody was getting very close to me. They had one-way aisles, which everybody was ignoring.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a big crowded day at Walmart. And I was like, nah. I was like, nah, I'll just die on the wave runner without a life jacket because I'm not going in there.
and you might get, you know, for a while I seemed like cops were not ticketing anybody. Like, I think cops were afraid to pull people over. They don't want to get COVID, you know. But I've seen cops like they must be down on tickets quotas or something because I've seen them on the highway just like three of them lined up trying to grab people. So you could get ticketed for that life vest.
I just have one other thing about the video.
Yeah.
The Gelson's video.
Yeah.
At the end, I think what might have bothered me the most about it was, so the guy who was wiping down the carts or like first employee, and he was in such a good mood and everything like that. And she's like, towards the end, she's like, oh, you're so happy. I'm so, you know, something like that. You're so happy. And he's like, well, yeah, normally I bartend and I wouldn't have a job otherwise. So I'm happy to be working. And she just immediately glossed over that and was like, yes, but my constitutional rights are, you know, blah, 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 about her mask. I'm like, geez, lady, didn't you hear? He used to have a job where he was making more money as a bartender. Now he's doing this and he's in good spirits. Why don't you have a little compassion and whatnot for. That was it. It was just like, wow. It didn't seem like anything was going to take her out of her world of just thinking about herself. But I don't know if she really did have a very serious medical condition where she couldn't put on a bandana or a paper towel over her.
just nose and mouth. Just let people pick it up. What's the most embarrassing thing you could buy at a lady products, feminine hygiene? Is that it? Like, come on, you're gonna hand them to somebody to ring up anyway. So it's just, it was just BS.
Well, yeah, it did seem like it because they offered to do her shopping for her. So
no, I have personal items. No, you don't. Shut up. Okay. All right. Next topic. Okay. This was inserted this last minute. Donald Trump today tweeted about the mail-in ballots. He said there's no way zero that mail-in ballots will be anything less than substantially fraudulent. Mailboxes will be robbed, ballots will be forged and even illegally printed out and fraudulently signed. The governor of California, blah, blah, blah. He did two tweets. For the first time ever, Twitter put fact checks on him. And I don't know if this is everyone's was blowing up today because they've never done that for anybody. And so their first go is at the president. Do you think this is a good, or is this intrusion on the freedom that Twitter allows?
I am of the opinion.
Yeah.
And this is a bigger issue because this has to do with the bigger picture of companies and their right. Uh-huh. I believe that if you're a Twitter user or a Yelp user or a Facebook user, or you like to do business at a bakery or any other storefront business, you have a right to do business with them or not do business with them. And they have a right to put something, either edit or remove or censor what you say, because you are not in a public place. You are in a private place, whether it be a bakery or whether it be a Twitter feed. I'm choosing to do business with Twitter and read what's on there. And so I believe what they did was great in many ways. But as far as my opinion of just the legal issue, I think it's great they did it because there was he said facts that were not correct. And they were letting us know. And if people don't like it, they don't have to go to Twitter. Now, the fact that they did it to the president is the first post, which I didn't realize that was the first time they did that.
As far as I can tell, I could be someone I'm sure will tweet at me and tell me I'm wrong.
But Twitter's going to tweet at you and tell you to fact check
that.
But I love it. I think anything that gets him riled up is good for entertainment, it's good for comedy, and it's good for the people who are on the opposite side of the room from his party. Yeah. So, and it probably, his people probably riles them up too. So,
do you think that Twitter, so many people now are getting their news from sources like Twitter and Facebook. Do you think those companies have a responsibility to notate when there are false articles or false statements going on by public officials?
No.
Because a news organization, if they knowingly allowed a reporter to go on and say, or if they just aired somebody saying something that was completely false and wrong, they do have a responsibility to state that what they just said is not true. There's facts that they are responsible. So I was wondering if you guys thought, do you think Facebook started fact-checking or fact-flagging articles?
I do think it's important. I mean, because you're saying that's where a lot of us are getting our news.
Yeah.
If it's coming from if it's coming from the president or from a figure that says something that really matters, like the whole him suggesting to drink bleach. Like if some Joe Schmo said that, you don't need a fact check Joe Schmo. It's like, don't listen to Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
If whoever's supposed to be in charge of everybody says it, it has a lot more weight. So that fact checking it's important. You know,
yeah.
I think it's a little dangerous. I suppose it would just be dangerous if it was used to suppress the correct information.
Right.
But then that's where you know, if it's something that's not so black and white, you might be like, oh, well, what's true and what's not true? And what are they suppressing? But I mean, certain things, it's just, it is black and white. You can't give out misinformation like that. And there is a responsibility.
Okay.
Well, I agree with you, Samantha. I agree, but I'm going to add one thing to it. I don't think it's their responsibility. I don't think they should have to do it. I think they should want to do it. And I think that that should be something that they believe is the right thing to do in order to keep their business going, right? So, for example, when I see them doing that, it makes me want to go to Twitter more because it tells me that is a good business that is spending some of their money to make me safer. And that I believe that should be the motivation, is that they want to do what's right, and therefore they're going to do it, not because the government told them to do it, not because if they don't do it and another competing company, say Facebook or MySpace or AOL or whoever decides to do that, that's going to make them a better company, and it's going to make me want to go there to do my social media. So I believe, you know, that's what the US is about. It's about competition. It's about free marketplace. And sometimes I get a little bit when the government says you have to do this, as opposed to, in my opinion, they should do it. Twitter and Facebook have taken two different points of view with how they are censoring political BS. And it's fun to watch to me, because I'm watching to see which one wins and which one the people will go to, because that literally tells you if what's working, rather than the government saying you have to do this and you have to do that, which I think is fascinating. So yeah, that's totally on the same page as you, but I just add to it, whether it's a moral, a legal, or just it's the right thing to do to keep their business going. There's a reason why people aren't on AOL anymore. There's a reason why MySpace died, and that's because of innovation, because Facebook came and kicked their butt, and then Twitter's now coming, and then TikTok is now getting all our kids. Why? Because they're figuring out what people want, and then they're adapting quickly. And that's, so the fact that Twitter did that made me go, ah, yes, that's what I thought, you know, and what a great way to introduce a new feature.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Moving up, we got to move on here. The last hot topic, which will combine with our new, also another segment, post of the week, Joe Biden, I'm not sure Jason wants to comment on this one.
I don't know. I feel like Jason is the one most qualified to comment on this.
Babies are saying night night to me. Night night.
Ah, good night, babies.
Yeah, they come in. This is the segment of the show where the babies come in and say good night to me. I do want to play. I'm trying to see if I can actually play it here.
Oh, great. Because I want to hear it again.
It's not. Wait. Skip.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
you. Take a look at my record, man.
Okay. Okay, so I mean that's the soundbite that everyone got that's going out there. They didn't play the few minutes before then, but you've seen the clip. Both of you actually seen it, right?
Yeah, but did you just play bingo?
What? Oh, there is bingo playing in the background, I guess, right now.
Oh, I was like, babies are playing. The clip is a nursery or a children's song.
So you can hear that. Oh, that's good to know.
No, it's okay. I thought that was the clip, and I'm like, they put this underneath what Biden said.
That's hilarious. Okay, on the clip, when he says he almost got through a whole interview with Champagne, whatever he's called.
Charlemagne.
I call him Champagne. He almost got the whole thing without saying a gaffe, right? Which was impressive as it was. But of course, he had to swing at something. Watching it, there is no doubt, with his big smile in the beginning and right after, we all know Biden was trying to make a joke and be down with him, like to be down, right? Because he thinks he was the vice president to the first black president. He thinks he has a pass, right? That he can say some things. He's saying the guy's calling him man the whole time, right? Hey, man. And he never does that with white people. But like, we all know he was joking. And I know, like, the first thing when you say that, though, to people is like, oh, well, Trump said he was joking and you're not going to. No, but the point is, Trump is never joking, though. He's serious. And Biden gave it away. Like, it's an obvious joke, first of all.
I don't know. Right? I straight up hated that he said that.
You did?
Oh, hell yeah.
You didn't take it as a joke? Like, you're like, hey,
it's not funny.
No.
I feel like if he said that in a room full of like close friends who knew him well, you know, like I would say we could joke around like that, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
But if somebody who didn't know me said to me that I'm not, I don't like it when anybody tells me I'm not black. If anybody says I'm too black, I'm too white.
He said, if you can't tell the difference between me and Trump, you ain't black. You don't think black people can't tell the difference between the two?
But that's not the clip that I saw, feel free to chime in whatever you want there. Yeah. But the clip that I saw, I know you're like, I'm sad. No, you get to have an opinion. The clip that I saw, because I didn't watch the whole thing, Charlemagne, and I sure hope I'm getting his name right, he was asking a real question. He was asking a real question, and that question was just like, hey, don't worry about it if you can't tell you're not black. Do you know what I'm saying? It's, I don't Hold like on. It.
Listen. This is what
mm-hmm.
he said.
VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more mm-hmm. questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem yeah. figuring out where
No,
you're
that's why
here,
all I heard was
Trump,
the song before.
Oh,
can
okay.
I put a little context on this? Because yeah. I actually went and listened to the whole interview because I was curious.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And I was curious because I am serious. Like, I wanted to know where this was going because it's definitely by far his biggest mistake he's made. So I wanted to find out the context of it.
Yeah.
So the context of it was he had an amazing interview where he was very casual. He's obviously interviewed with this radio guy before. I did a little research on him, and he's a great, very popular podcaster, you know. Mm-hmm.
The Breakfast Club, viewer. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
He's very he interviews the opposite side. He's very balanced. And what happened here is they ran out of time. There was a hard cut because Biden had to get somewhere else. So they said, okay, well, we're done here, da da da. And he said something like, I'm hoping I'll have some time to ask you some more questions another time. That was all he said. It was kind of just the end of the interview. Yeah. And that's when Biden went, well, wait a second. What he was trying to say was, if you need to ask questions at this point, whether you're going to vote for me or Trump, why did we even talk? Like, that's what he was trying to say. But because he was so casual at that point, he brought in that quote, which was absolutely the wrong thing to say at that time. I could see when they have their strategy meetings that they constantly say, and they've said it for years, is that the black vote does go to Democrats generally. That's kind of the bigger picture thing. Obviously, 1.6 million, I think, African-Americans voted for Trump. And that's so it's not fair to say that because yeah. obviously there are some Americans that believe in Trump. So it was the stupidest thing he could have said. And And you could see it in his face as soon as it was over, he knew, right? Because you could
in
video.
Yeah, it's sure bad to bomb on stage when you're at an open mic, bombing when you're running for president, even worse. I mean, I'm not going to say I think he's a terrible person because of that bad joke or anything, but it definitely rubbed me the wrong way because I don't like it when people try to pander to me for race. Like, if I'm asking a real question, give me a real answer. Okay. Don't say I should think a certain way because I'm black, and I'm not black if I don't think that way.
Let me ask you, Samantha. So did you, when I sent this, did you watch the whole clip?
Yeah, it was like 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I'm saying there wasn't a question before. That's why I'm wondering. And then because it just seemed like this offhanded thing. I interpreted when I heard it was, if you can't tell the difference between us, between me and Trump, you ain't black. Black people know better is how I took it. Black people know better. They know that we're not the same. Because what I hear from a lot of mostly white people is the lesser of both evils. They're both the same. He's Joe's a Republican. They keep calling Biden a Republican. And one of the reasons I think that Biden got there, his nomination, was the black votes, who are very sophisticated in those states. They are very on top of politics. They have always been on top of politics since 68, right? And they know the difference between the two. They know policy differences. You can't tell them that Biden is a Republican. And that's how I and I thought he was too casual. I was telling a friend, I think Joe, he's the kind of person who I don't think he has any harm in his mind at all toward any black people. I think he would sing along with a rap song and say the N-word and not realize he's not supposed to. I think he's that kind of white guy. Like, what? Oh, no, I was just singing the song because I love it. Like, no, you can't do that. Don't sing that. Oh, okay. And I will say this, props to him for his interview today. And he had said something shortly after that. What I love about him is when he's told that's not cool, he listens and says, oh, shit, I'm sorry. I didn't do that. And he was even a question on that. He said, well, people say you shouldn't apologize just for making a mistake. And he says, no, I absolutely should apologize if what I said was hurtful.
Wait, people said you should not apologize if you made a mistake?
Some people say that because then you're...
Was it that lady at Gelson's?
No, people... People in general will say this, don't apologize because you just bring more attention to it, or like if it's a gaffe, don't bring attention to it. So that's why people will try to ignore those. But he owns up to it. And those are the words you've not heard for 3.5 years. Is I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Let's just put the argument I was having, and I'll make this quick, with somebody, my father, actually, who won't be watching this, thank God. he and I were talking about this issue today, actually. And he said the same thing you said, that the argument is, well, you know, Trump says something and we get all over him, but we can't. And I said, well, the difference is I look at context. I look at what was meant behind the content. So when Biden said that, I believe he said he was trying to say, if you don't know the difference between us, then you got a problem. That's weird if you don't know what the difference between the two of us is. I wish Biden hadn't used the word you're not black, because the context of what he was trying to say made sense. When Trump said grab him by the pussy, he was trying to say, because I'm powerful and I can get a woman to do anything I want. So again, it's about the concept. It's not the words he used, it's what he meant in it. And that's what I try to look at anytime I see anybody. Even the whole bleach thing. You mentioned, Samantha, the bleach thing. I actually took Trump's side on that one, because I know what he was trying to say. All he was trying to say is they're looking at everything. They're looking at all different ways to fix this COVID thing. He's just made an idiotic remark, and he didn't mean to say go drink bleach. But unfortunately, people are idiots and they do that. And CNN ran with the story, and it made me go, oh, my God, there's so many other things that we can make fun of Trump for.
This is the thing about the responsibility thing where before you're kind of saying the difference of like, is it a responsibility or a moral thing or a legal thing or blah, blah, blah. Listen, this whole situation we're in the world right now has definitely made me far more judgy than I normally am. Silas, you probably know I'm not normally so judgy. And I, the thing about what you're saying about the bleach thing with Trump. Yeah. When I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, I think I could tell what he's saying. He's not saying go drink bleach. Right. I agree with what you're saying. He's just like thinking out loud. But what upset me about it and why I wasn't cutting him any slack is he is the president. I'm not the president. I know when I write emails, I have to be careful and thoughtful about what I say. And I can't write an email the way I'm talking to you guys on this podcast. You know, it's like that is your job. So I'm going to hold you to a higher standard. And that is why I just have such a short fuse with, with that one right now. Okay. I really do. And like, you know, the Biden thing, it did piss me off. Does it mean I hate him? No,
okay,
definitely not. I thought it was bad taste. He's sorry for it. You know, he was trying to be funny. To me, it wasn't funny, but I don't like it. I think Silas and I talked about this before, the whole being mixed thing anyway. Sometimes you can say you're not black enough to me and I'm going to laugh, or you call me white or whatever and I'll laugh. Sometimes people say, I'll be like, shut the F up. It just depends.
How is the black community taking that? I'm curious, other than, I mean, obviously black Republicans are loving it because it's a soundbite that they could use, which God, if I were them, I would too.
I think it really, I know, and I've been yelled at for the black community is not a monolith, right? I've been told that. And I'm like, yeah, but generally, I think over what I've seen in one Seattle black part, they call it the salon group, is a bunch of people getting mad and riled up. But honestly, I think it's like anyone who is already mad at Biden is just using it to be mad at Biden further. And for everyone else, it's like, no, it was another, which brings me to the post of the week, right? This is related to the post of the week. This is a guy, he's not black. It's like the farthest from black, by the way. So this is a new segment where I'm pulling out, I'm finding some of my favorite social media posts of the week, and I'm finding one, and I'm going to read it on here. And this is from Brendan Monahan, I believe is how we pronounce it. He's the brother of a comic that I know that used to live in Portland. He used to be a Republican until Donald Trump, and now he's kind of it's left him. But so this is what he wrote. In no particular order, a few observations from someone without a dog-faced pony soldier in this fight. Number one, Joe Biden is an idiot. Most of the country has known this for at least the last 30 years. Number two, in spite of this, he still managed to serve 36 years in the United States Senate and 8 as VP to America's first black president. Number three, his gaffes are baked into his support. They're a known quantity, and people still like him. His favorability ratings are actually above water. Number four, few, if any, minds were changed today, and they are not likely to be changed by the many. Many other gaffes, they will not be changed by the many, many other gaffes he will make by November. Number five, the ones raising the biggest stink about this have no intention of voting for him anyway. It's mostly butthurt burners, red hat trolls, and of course, Russian bots. Number six, most people, regardless of color, can tell the difference between an idiot and a fanatical racist. Seven, none of this is going to matter by November. Not this, not Burisma, not Obamagate, not her emails, nothing. Eight, this is as close to a single issue election as we've ever seen in our lifetime. Namely, do you approve or disapprove of the way Donald Trump is handling the coronavirus pandemic? Nine, Trump seems to be losing badly on this question, despite his attempts to outsource all responsibility for it. In fact, he trails every governor in America in every state on this question. 10. Trump's reelection and his ability to continue to live in this country as a free person depends on the election being about literally anything else. 11. I don't believe even he, the 10-foot-tall god his followers believe him to be, can change that in under 6 months. 12. Even under what we would have considered normal circumstances, Trump's reelection prospects were no better than a coin flip. Hillary being off the ballot is itself worth about 3 points to the Democrats. 13. While I don't think he'll lose, say, Montana in this election looks a lot more like 1964 or 1932 than 2004, maybe 1992. 14. Is Biden perfect? No. Is he ideal? No. Is he good enough? Probably not. Could he possibly be the worse president than this guy if he tried? Absolutely not. And that's honestly about as good as we can hope for right now. And finally, number 15. But again, none of this will matter in 6 months or, in all likelihood, 6 days. Brendan Monahan. We're skipping nerd news today because we're doing that. And we are moving on. Okay. I just want to give you some quick watchable before we get into the guest segment of the show. What's watchable? Connor, what's watchable? So I have two picks for this week. It's a series pick of the week. Okay. A serialized show. My recommendation is Upload on Amazon Prime. Have either of you seen this?
No, but it's on my list.
Yeah.
Both of you on the list. Okay. If you haven't heard of it yet, it is basically a show that takes place when a man gets to choose between death and going to a VR world and goes to a VR world. And there we see him living and developing feelings for somebody on the outside. As people in the VR world can communicate to people, people in and out can communicate with each other. It is a great overall. I think it is a great, it's an interesting look at the future, a not too distant future, but future enough that VR is very advanced. And there's a lot of other technologies that are advanced. It reads so much like today, like throughout it, but with better technology. And there's almost nothing on it that doesn't seem possible to a degree. You're like, every little techno thing that they have on there is like, oh yeah, I could see that's where we're heading. And so it is sci-fi. It's technically sci-fi, but I'm like, it's barely sci-fi. But it's a nice comedy drama. Highly recommend. My film pick of the week is Wandering Earth, which can be seen on Netflix. It is a Chinese film. So it's subtitled, or you can do the dubbing. I was late at night when I was watching, so I just dubbed it so I didn't have to read. It's in the future, the not very far, like maybe 10 years from now, they discover the sun has about 100 years of life left before its supernovas. So they decide to move the Earth, and they strap the Earth with rockets and just start moving it. And they have a plan on how they're going to move it to another distant area, which is going to take about 300 to 400 years, I believe. So it's going to be a generational plan. So this is one of the most beautiful films, sci-fi films, you'll see. It is beautifully shot. It is gorgeous. I wish this was on the big screen so I could see it on the big screen. I just can't get over the cinematography on it. It is incredible. The CGI is incredible. Everything looks real. Like, you're like, this is really happening. The story is okay. It's a decent story. It's original. I mean, there's a lot of originality about it. Like, this very well easily could have been a horrible, you know, sci-fi channel movie like idea. That they would have, but this director did take it into an original story with good acting. It's not very predictable, and I had heard that this was the best sci-fi movie on Netflix, and that it was amazing that people weren't watching it. I get it, because Americans have a prejudice against foreign films, like they just don't watch them. But I'll tell you, even if you don't watch foreign films, give this one a chance. It's absolutely beautiful. I think you'll enjoy it. I would give it a solid B as a film, but visually, it's an A+. Absolutely. So watch it. Okay. And then Jason DeLeo, my friend, I have known you. I'm actually surprised we didn't meet sooner.
Sure.
Between comedy and between comedy, I would think that, I don't know, Samantha, when you're in LA, did comedy and improv ever, like stand-up, I just like to say comedy and improv because they're two different things. Did stand-up and improv cross very much down there?
There were a few. Oh, that seemed loud. There were a few people. Mostly no, like a majority no, but there was some. But the other thing sometimes they would do is they would have shows where they would do like have a stand up open.
Yeah.
And then do improv. So sometimes you get mixed shows. Okay. Yeah.
Not a lot of mix in sketch, because sketch is often improvisers and stand-ups that are kind of combining, which of course leads to, you know, Saturday Night Live. So if you a lot of Saturday Night Live people, if you think about, are either they came from the stand-up world or they came from the improv world and met in the sketch world.
I didn't realize how many stand-ups didn't like improvers until I got involved in stand-up, because I'd done improv first, but they're always making fun of improvers, and I'm like, I don't know why. I don't really get
it. It's a legitimate. It's if you, because the amount of work you have to put into a stand-up is incredibly higher than improv.
Really?
Oh, I completely. And I'm an improviser, so I would say that. I'm very friendly with a lot of comedians, and I know how hard it is to get a 2-minute bit perfect.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess I guess I feel like the improv muscles take so long to train that's I've always been impressed just how quickly people can think on their feet, the skilled improver.
Yes, that is correct. And it does take a lot of time and a lot of stage time and a lot of practice time to become a really good improviser. But on the other hand, I've met improvisers who never took a class before, but they just have that natural quickness, and they kind of naturally, instinctually have the yes and attitude, where it's easy for them to react and make the other person look good. Like, that's like, In the improv world, that's a big difference between a great improviser and a mediocre improviser. You know, that's at least my opinion.
You know, yeah, I kind of just working this thought out right now. Okay, so bear with me.
Okay.
Because I felt when I was in LA, at least I felt that the difference was more of a personality clash, that like a lot of improvisers would be more like cheerful and let's come together with the yes and. And a lot of comedians are just a little bit more like in their heads, or like a little more solo, or not necessarily depressed, but their yes and is more of like a no but. But it's not like a no but breaking. It's like breaking it open in a way, you know? I don't know.
My comedian like, Zoltan Cassis, we were talking one night. He said he thinks that the animosity comes from that improvers are naturally optimistic with the yes and, where stand-ups are naturally pessimistic, because the stand-up tends to talk about everything you don't like. Like, you're very negative, or like, oh, you know what's wrong with this? They're always talking about what's wrong with things. Where improvers are like almost trying to spin the positive. And so he thinks the clash happens there. Thought that was an interesting.
When an improviser fails, they fail with everybody on stage. When a comedian fails, they have to take all that to themselves. So you know?
And then they have to do a public apology after their conversation on The Breakfast Club.
No, see, I was going to say, like, no, they have to, they blame the audience. Then they blame the booker for doing the wrong order that cost. That was the problem. The last thing is their material.
Just blame the audience. Yeah. That was a bad suggestion. It was the audience. Or the musician, which is me, because I'm also an musician improviser.
That's awesome.
What I do these days.
Jason, how did you start in improv? Were you a theater kid?
I was a theater kid, but that's not what brought me into improv. When I worked on cruise ships all those years, I used to do, without realizing it, a lot of improv, because I started as crew staff and then I became an officer running the front desk, but I still would participate in guest shows. I still would do a lot of the comedy stuff because it was fun. And I used to do, it's a very social job, so you are kind of constantly improvising because you're thinking about five different things while trying to be social with guests. So there's a lot of improv there. But what got me into it was after my divorce, I was dating a wonderful person who figured out that I was missing an artistic endeavor in my life. And went and saw a show over at Unexpected Productions, the Market Theater, the company I'm a part of. And I was hooked, and they happened to say at the end, hey, we're starting classes. So she's like, you should take an improv class. So I jumped into it and found not only a artistic outlet, but I found a community. I found, you know, pretty much all of my best friends are part of that community. You know, I travel with them. We, you know, I started off performing on stage, and then after about 4 or 5 years, we were missing musicians, and I played, you know, a little bit of keyboard over the years. So I kind of picked it back up again to help with some shows. And it turns out that's what I now focus on. So I'm now 10 years with Unexpected Productions, and perform when we're at back at the theater, you know, sometimes 3-4 shows a week. And right now on Zoom, we're doing 3 shows a week right now. And I've been doing scoring for at least 2 of them almost every week. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty
That's
fun.
Cool.
Is 10 years. Like, I've been, I was like, well, I've been doing, how long have I been doing comedy? I was like, you've been doing that longer than I've been doing comedy, I think.
Yeah, 11 years if you include my training, but my classes. But I started doing things on the stage about 10 years ago.
When you weren't doing anything artistic, what were you doing? Because I never know. I don't understand how that half lives. What? I've never not had an outlet. Like
working.
Working?
Everything was about work. Now, I happen to have a job that I absolutely love. So it was, but everything was about the job. Everything was about the industry. Everything was about you know, when you get a divorce, you kind of have to split the friends, and most of the friends went the other side. Because I came off of ships I was on ships for 8 years, so I didn't have any friends locally in Seattle. So I
used to be on the ships.
Yes, I worked on board for 9 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was been around the world multiple times. And
wow, that HP Chromebook should have been with you. I've had a much better life.
Samantha with the callbacks all night.
I love it. I love it. No, yeah. No, that's and it's kind of a, you know, I started in my 20s right out of film school working for Disney. And that's what got me my first job at Holland America was a contact I had at Disney, and took a job as crew staff because I just wasn't ready to, you know, get into the career thing. So at 23, I became, I did bingo and did the Macarena by the pool deck with 80-year-olds. I mean, that's how it all started. And it was a blast. And you work 7 days a week, you work 10 hours a day, and you love it. And then you hate it. And then you love it. And it kind of got in my blood. It still is.
Oh, wow.
Do you, and I know we know the cruise industry is having a rough time right now, a rough seas, you might say. But sounds like August, right? They'll be coming back probably.
You know, the word on the street is the cruise lines would like to start in August or September. There's a ton of factors that the cruise industry does not have control over.
Yeah.
See local governments, countries between Canada and the US, local states. For example, just Seattle, there are multiple agencies that have to give a sign off that go all the way from the top all the way down to the city council. So but they're working on it. I'm involved in a lot of really cool stuff. We got through the norovirus. I was heavy into the norovirus. I was actually guest relations manager on the first cruise ship that was on CNN to get it, the Amsterdam out of Fort Lauderdale. I was the guest relations manager on that ship. I went through it. So I saw personally how the cruise industry handled it. And they handled it beautifully. And I'm very confident that they're going to be far beyond what any other hospitality, or for that matter, any business is, as far as keeping the guests safe, because that's what we're good at. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of new technology. That's for sure.
Wow.
Do you feel, so you did 9 years before improv, right? Is that right?
Correct.
Do you feel like you got better at your job after you started doing improv?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I became a better manager.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Because improv gives you the skills of listening. That is something that a lot of people don't have, and a lot of bosses don't have.
What was that? It's just, what'd you say?
Listening, like a lot of bosses.
Gotcha.
She took me. I'm also a little slow. So, but the reality of it is, it taught me how to listen. It taught me how to listen to what everybody said, and my entire management style, learning from bosses that I've worked for in the past that I didn't respect, and bosses that I did respect, is all about inclusion. Whenever anybody calls me a boss, for example, I say, I'm not your boss. I'm a team member just like you, and your opinion matters just as much as mine. The only difference is I got to decide which opinion we go with, because that's my job. But, you know, it's always, and that's, I get that from improv totally, is just listening to every offer and keeping an open mind and knowing you're not always right. And sometimes you have to take an idea you have and throw it out the garbage because somebody else has an idea. And you got to try it.
You're making me miss improv. Yeah,
I teach improv occasionally at the Village Kid Stage, and I always, whenever I go in there, I always tell the kids, I tell them, this is the most important class you're ever going to take, because the skills here are the same ones that you're going to use in whatever business or whatever you end up doing, you're going to use improv. And so I think this is the most important class you're ever going to take. So
I love working with teenagers in improv. I've done some of our shows with our teenage group over at Unexpected Productions, and they're great. They're just, you know, is the improv great? Sometimes it is, but they're so open and they're so out of the box, and it's just like, wow, that's great.
Yeah, I'm always, I love it. I love it so much. Teaching improv is one of the favorite things that I do. And I can't even imagine, honestly, I can't imagine teaching like stand up. Like, that's just like, I've seen classes and I'm like, I just don't, you know, usually they're just like, oh, come in, come back next week with some more ideas. You know, they tell you, maybe you could think about this. But, you know, like, improv class is just so exciting. I've always loved it. And I love what, like, I forget, it's a documentary that I saw on Pixar using it for like everybody, like everyone in the whole company has to use it. I just think, and it's the one class that I tell people, I think they should always, if they want to get into something, like take an improv class. Cause it's
even just a basic one, a 100 level with any company is unbelievably helpful in just getting people to kind of open up a little bit and listen better. That's what it's all about. You just play games and learn how to open up.
And I'd even say so we met because of Lyft. We were both Lyft drivers. In the early days, we were early adopters. And I always thought that, Lyft was like a big giant improv exercise. Like, it helped me both. I think Lyft was one of the best things to help me with cold sales, because I would just try to start a conversation based off of anything. So which kind of used the improv I had learned. Like, I'd see something, you know, the hat, and I go like, oh, I love that hat. It's my favorite kind of hat, you know? And like, then we would go from there, and it just like, get the yes and to see if the person would start playing with you. You had a scene, you know, whether it was a 5-minute scene just up to Pike's place or a 30-minute one to the airport. It was this quick thing. But if they were like, thanks, and that's all they said, you know, that was a nice, oh, they just said no to me. Okay. That's, I get it. But I think I am a better improver because of Lyft and a better salesperson when I do that, like ability to start a conversation with anything. Did you ever feel like that doing Lyft?
Oh, absolutely. It was, and I kind of already had a lot of that because I came from ship. So it's starting conversations with strangers is something you learn how to do very quickly on ships. And you don't, it's kind of something, you know, you kind of have to have naturally, you know.
Yeah.
Introverts don't always have that, but I also consider myself an introvert, but I could start a conversation with anybody easily. It's just whether I can stay focused, you know? And yeah. I think that's what a lot of that, what I learned on both ships and working for driving the Lyft and the Uber was the reading the room. You know, like you said, you know right away if somebody wants to talk or not. And it's also interesting to try to keep the conversations different because makes your day go by faster. So it's also your own entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of improv skills there where you're just trying to, because you also don't want to bore the heck out of them. You know, you don't want it to all be about yourself, you know, things like that. You learn very quickly when people shut down. So it's definitely good social. It was a good social time.
Samantha, how has improv changed your life?
I don't know. I mean,
do you ever use it? Do you feel like?
Oh, for sure. But I just feel like a lot of techniques just overlap. Do you know what I mean?
Because you're mainly you never did improv, right? You're an acting, a master thespian, right?
Yeah, but
I know
I'm a graduate of the Second City Conservatory in Hollywood in their improv conservatory for 2 years and a graduate of their directing program.
Well, I knew
Silence. That's called pedigree.
That is it's pedigree. I knew I was talking every time I talked to Samantha, I am aware of her pedigree. I did not know the depth of it. I knew she was a master thespian from UW.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. But that's why, like, I get sometimes, you know, with these questions, I'm like, going into the vault and thinking, because it's like such an overlap, right? Like, I remember
loved when I worked with Francis.
Yes. Yes. Then, you know, because I remember, of course, I loved doing improv in high school and, you know, watching it all of the time. And then, you know, with acting, like regular acting, non-comedic improv, there's all sorts of improv exercises, you know, you do with your character development or other techniques. And then there's viewpoints and physical improvisation, all the stuff. So improvisation has a huge impact on what I do. But it's just, I wanted to answer it right. I'm like, well, which kind do you mean? You know what I mean? And I think that any sort of education that we get, like we just absorb, you know, as some of it might stick to us a little bit more and be a little bit more, we see that light a little bit, but it all gets absorbed in us, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay, thanks. Okay. I was like, I was just trying to give an honest answer. It was interesting though, because
what program? That's hard to get in. The conservatory's a little bit bigger. Director's program, I'm impressed.
Thank you.
That's very cool. That's a great program.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I really did enjoy. Like, I loved my time at Second City. It was one of my favorite parts of being in LA. But I did find it interesting in the director program. I think that's kind of where the sort of stand-up bug started seeping in before I knew it was seeping in, because stand-up was the last thing I did. And I, as much as I love improv, I don't always... Sometimes it's overwhelming to have like that improv energy, depending on the, like if I'm around a bunch of extroverts, because I also consider myself to be a little bit more of an introvert, or, you know, just when I'm not performing or whatever. If I'm around a bunch of high energy people, it's kind of hard to have my energy at that same level. unless if it's like for an acting role and I've already committed to this. But if you're just jumping into the scene, like I want to see how the scene develops and maybe I'm going to take a little bit longer. But if I'm in a room with a bunch of introverts, then all of a sudden I'm the extrovert and I'm like, hey guys, this is how we do the exercise, you know, kind of what I mean. I feel like I'm being super loud right now.
No, I get you.
It sounds to me like probably an amazing long form improviser, which is kind of what I concentrate on a lot more. I actually enjoy long form for the reasons you're saying, because you have a little bit more space, and especially me as a musician, I want space. I want people to not talk so much, because it gives me a chance to be another character on the stage using, you know, music. And I love that. So I totally agree. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think too, because I think generally having a team mindset that I remember being in some classes and they're just like all these high energy guys and they have their idea and they have to get out there right away. And I'm like, I'm not going to fight them to be the first one out to say something. I'm going to wait for when the scene needs me. So sometimes it meant I didn't go up as often as I could have if I was going to be more aggressive, but I don't know, wasn't interested in that.
You would love what we're doing right now at UP, because that's a lot of what we're doing, is really working the more story-based long form.
Oh, cool.
This Saturday, we're doing not to put out a plug.
No, do it.
Put out a plug. Do it.
We do a improvised radio drama where we're not actually, we use Zoom, but it's not our faces. It's actually, we have a library of old pictures that we use as a character and use Zoom's, you know, feature of being able to change the name and have that character come and then have characters come in and out.
Oh, cool. With
it. And I'm scoring it live like an old movie. And it is, we were on our third show this Saturday night at 8:30. It's on our Twitch channel, twitch.com/forward/ Unexpected Productions, also unexpectedproductions.org. It's absolutely free because we're still not charging.
Yeah.
And it's probably better shows I've seen because improv's tough to do on Zoom.
Ooh,
but this show really is figured out because it's story based.
Yeah.
That's cool. That sounds good.
That's fantastic. People need to check that out.
Yeah, Saturday.
So we're reaching the end here. So it's now the hot seat. It's the 7 questions for Jason. The first time you come on this show, it is the 7 questions you'll get. Okay.
You got it.
All right.
I'm ready.
What are you most nerdy about?
The hospitality industry, namely my Airbnbs. I have 9 of them.
Yeah. Okay. You get really into them?
Like, I really do.
Yeah.
It's goofy how much time I put into the whole situation. Love it.
Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Pizza and tacos. Yeah, I had to go back and forth because I've been thinking about tacos all day today. And I had tacos for lunch yesterday. So,
yeah. What's something that you love to drink?
Ice water.
Really?
I drink a lot of ice water. In fact, I have 3 different kinds of ice at my house. Because I have the regular square ice. I have the crushed ice that the refrigerator makes. And I have one of those machines that makes the ice that's like Sonic ice that I have. I can't think what it's called, but it's a little ice machine I have up. Like I can hear it running right now. That's what's actually in here.
It's invisible, but it's great.
I also have a filter and because I like good tasting water.
Ice one. What kind of music do you love?
Kind of a combination of rock, pop, and Broadway.
Okay.
But I also like almost all kinds of music, given the fact that I'm a musician. So I there's not very much music I don't enjoy or can't appreciate something about it. Love hip hop. Big hip hop fan.
You don't like hip hop?
No, I'm part of an improvised hip hop group too that we do shows every couple of years. You've seen the show, haven't you, Silas?
No.
Hip opera?
No. I need to.
We were actually just about to do a new run starting in April. Hmm. I canceled.
Oh. What do you love to create?
I like to create happiness in others. I like to put out my hand and try to just create positivity. You know, it's balance, you know, balance. You know, I try to understand what other people are thinking. And yeah.
What's a game you love to play?
A game. God, I don't play a lot of games. My girlfriend's been trying to get me into more of these board games and things, but we've been playing these like escape rooms in a box.
Okay.
And that's been really, really fun. So we went to an escape room right before everything happened. It was my first one and I was completely lost, but I got it. I'm like, okay, this could be fun now going into the second one, and then everything happened. So we found some in a box and we've been playing those. Those are kind of fun. Awesome. 'Cause you can cheat.
Yeah. Okay. And last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for all the younger people that I've mentored over the years in my various jobs, as being a good boss, as being a good partner, as being a good, that they gained something that made them better people.
Awesome. Jason DeLeo, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
All right. And Samantha, always great to have you.
Thank you. It was great to be here. I have to find out what kind of pizza and what style of taco.
Oh, yeah.
Soft or crunchy?
Soft or crunchy.
All of the above, pepperoni and black olive, most styles I like.
Sorry, I just had to know. It was a cliffhanger for me.
Is there anything that doesn't go on?
Onions. On a taco?
No, on a pizza. Anything that doesn't go on a pizza?
I don't like most vegetables on pizza. mostly because I don't like most pizza vegetables. So onions, peppers, mushrooms, those are things I don't eat. But I love black olives. I do not like pineapple, but I've tasted it before and I could see why it would be a taste somebody might like. Just not my thing.
Ooh, that's such a diplomatic answer. It's like what a good president debate would answer, right? Say, well, does pineapple belong on pizza? You know, it's not my choice, but I understand. I've tried it, and I understand why people would do that. So I support your right to choose.
When it caramelizes, you know, the sugars that caramelize in any baked goods is awesome. So add that to the cheese. I get it. It's a nice combination for people like those flavors.
With a jalapeno, pineapple and jalapeno pizza.
I don't like peppers and I don't like jalapenos, but I do. And I don't like anything in salsa, but I do like to dip my chips in salsa, but I won't scoop it. And I don't like anything that's in salsa. It's all stuff I don't eat. But for some reason, when you dip it and taste it, just get that heat.
It does. It's a little bit different if you have like a big clump of salsa or just like a little coating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a difference.
I'd like to point out, Samantha, you did say that you like the pineapple and jalapeno pizza, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we end the show. Because I also say, Joseph Greenhour, suck it. Live long, live long, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper.